Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. I am Paul Price. This is the Paul Price Show. Twitter brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Peters Township, or visit them online at SouthHillsJeep.com. We're going to go to the Nemecolon hotline. Nemecolon, around every corner, Nemecolon creates real-life magic for guests. Talk to our good friend from the Westgate Sportsbook in Las Vegas. And that, of course, is Arthur DeCesar. Arthur, this is sort of the calm before the storm for you guys, as the NFL season is right around the corner. And quite frankly, what do they call it? Week zero in college football starts, on Saturday, correct?
Yeah, Paul, definitely. Obviously, NFL right around the corner. Week zero, I mean, not great games, but it's still college football. The games are going to count. Obviously, you know, there's a couple marquee names like Nebraska, Florida State. Everyone's going to be into that Vanderbilt-Hawaii game late night. But obviously, the next week, week one, is when we'll really get it rolling with college football. And then obviously, preseason football ends this week, so... Yeah, we're here, man. It's football season.
Well, you've got Florida State playing a 1AA, so that game probably isn't going to be on the board. Are there any games that people are going to be watching, through the eyes of the gambler? I guess Nebraska Northwestern, which, if I'm not mistaken, is taking place in like Ireland or something, which makes no sense to me, but. Are there any games that seem to be getting a lot of, action?
Well, right now, when you look at that week zero, obviously the most popular game is going to be that early start, like you said, in Dublin, which is the Northwestern-Nebraska game. And it's been Nebraska money. You know, we opened that game 11.5 Nebraska. We now have Nebraska sitting minus 13. So... good Nebraska money has come in. You know, when does Scott Frost finally turn it around? I think every year in the Big Ten, Nebraska's kind of been like, this is the year, this is the year, this is the year. Northwestern's obviously always feisty under Fitzgerald, but they're going to take a step back this year, probably be a 3-4-5 win team. So Nebraska almost laying the two touchdowns. It's moved a point and a half.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, like I said. If you're Nebraska, just as an aside, if you're Scott Frost and, you know, this is a kind of a do-or-die season for you, are you happy that you're opening the season against a Big Ten team in Ireland?
No, you can't be. It's a tough spot. Tough spot for both teams, obviously, right? But you're right. I mean, that's a great way to put it. I kind of feel the same way. It kind of is like a make-or-break year for Scott Frost. I mean, obviously, he's a Nebraska legend, and the Nebraska fans, they would like to get back to their glory. I don't know if they'll ever get back to the Tom Osborne-type teams, but, man, Nebraska has not been good for a while here. They all got real happy when they got Scott Frost, obviously came from UCF, and, you know, he was going to be the hometown guy who brought them back, but just hasn't worked out that way. And like you said, to travel all the way across the world, basically, to play in Ireland, some early kickoff, and, you know, you guys are going to be misplaced. And now you're laying two touchdowns to a Big Ten foe where you normally have a couple of those cupcakes on the schedule. Hasn't stopped the bettors, though. Like I said, nothing but Nebraska money.
Yeah, that's interesting that a lot of the money's coming in on Nebraska. Arthur, we're talking with Arthur DeCesar, Westgate Sportsbook in Las Vegas. Have we started to see money come in on the first week of the NFL season, or do people kind of wait to see after this week what the rosters look like, who plays, who starts, all that other stuff? Or are you starting to see some money come in on some of those early lines?
No, there's no doubt about it, Paul. We've definitely seen money come in on some of these week one games. You know, just a couple to hit on, a couple of sides. Giants at Titans. We opened the Titans -6.5. It's now Titans -5.5. And that's been sharp money. You know, we've had some sharp players and sharp groups come in, move that all the way to the 5.5, move to the point. But to me, that is not pro-Giant. That's more anti-Tennessee. I think that's why it is. I think they feel that's too many points. Giants probably be a little bit improved. Titans will take a little bit of a step back. Obviously, people not in love with Tannehill, so you've seen the move there. A big public play has been, you know, the Russell Wilson bowl. You're going to have the Broncos go to Seattle in week one. Obviously, the NFL always does this. They love to set these type of games up. When we initially opened the number, we opened Denver -4. Now sitting Denver -6. Obviously, a big number to lay on the road, but Denver with that defense and getting Russell Wilson. Seattle's going to be one of the worst 3 or 4 teams in the league. So you've seen, but that's all been public money. It's not that that's been any sharp money. And then a total that you've seen some good movement on is the total in the Tampa Bay Cowboy game. We opened that 52.5, now sitting at 50. So you've seen good under money come in. That is sharp money. So in a two and a half point move, and you know, we still got 10 plus days to go before these games. So you could see even more movement, you know, a couple half points in a couple of those other games. But right now, those have been the big three that have stood out to me for week one.
Well, I think that's the other part of it is people will probably start to get their last minute, futures bets, the over-unders and those kinds of things. In your estimation, are those numbers pretty much where they're going to be? There's probably not going to be that much movement, or could there be some movement in them as people start to make their last bets and things?
You know, Paul, I think when you look at something like a Super Bowl number, which that's always the biggest market, it's the market we're going to take the most action on, it's just the biggest pool. You know, I think you've seen probably the kind of where the numbers are going to be. And then obviously we update them week in and week out. I don't think outside of some major injury in this last preseason week, but you know, most of the big time guys who would move a number, obviously those are the quarterbacks, are not going to play. You know, we had a lot of big money come in on the Chargers over the last month. We opened the Chargers 20-1. They're now 10-1. I don't see the Chargers getting any lower than 10-1. 10-1's probably where it's going to be for them. Another team like the Ravens, we opened the Ravens 30-1, now sitting at 16-1. Once again, I don't see that number getting any lower. Some of the divisions could maybe move a little bit. You know, if someone's sitting at +140, maybe they go down to 135 or 130, which obviously is significant depending on, you know, how much you're betting. But I think the Super Bowl market is pretty much kind of flatlined. And then even as far as totals go, you know, some of the totals that we've moved half a game or a game, I don't see them moving anymore. Maybe a little bit of the juice gets kind of, you know, tweaked here or there. But, you know, you're right there as far as, you know, the NFL starting. So not a lot more to move because the sharp guys have already hit all this.
Well, again, I think that's the big thing is the sharp guys are the ones that basically dictate the movement of the lines, correct?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, when a lot of these numbers, obviously Super Bowl comes out basically the day after last year's Super Bowl. And then, you know, it takes a little bit. You know, we have free agency and draft, and then we put out division odds and over-under. So, you know, these things have been out for, you know, a month or 2 months, depending on what the market is. And then, you know, week one lines we've had out for a while as well. So, you know, if you now come in week one of the NFL season and you think you're going to get the Giants at 6.5, you already missed the best number because sharp guys have been betting it for the last 6 weeks. So, yeah, the sharp guys are on it right away. Obviously, the public comes in week out when they come to Vegas, and they just kind of bet the numbers that are available to them, and they miss out on the best numbers.
When you look at the NFL season and the NFL schedule at large and whatnot, I wonder, is the heaviest betting single, you know, betting on Thursday night football, Monday night football, or Sunday night football?
Man, that's a great question, Paul. Obviously, all standalone games. You know, I'll say this about week one just in general. Week one always has, like, the biggest handle of the year. It almost is like playoff handle. And, you know, it starts to decrease week in, you know, as we go to week two, week three, week four. Week one is always crazy. It's like everybody gets their fix in. But I always think it's Sunday night because Sunday night has everything as far as parlays and teasers tied to it. So the Sunday night game finishes off the day. Obviously, Thursday is great. People like to bet Thursday. But a lot of time the public hasn't come in yet. Maybe they fly in Thursday night or Friday morning. So a lot of those people who come in for a football weekend will miss the Thursday game. And some of them might fly out Sunday night or leave Monday morning and miss the Monday night game. So the Sunday night game always is a big deal for us, not only just from the standalone sense that, like, it could be a big decision for us on the game, but like I said, everything is tied into the Sunday night game.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. That's for sure. Meanwhile, with the NFL, I know that the most of the money coming in, or a lot of the money coming in, is on the NFL. But college football is still a pretty big generator of money. What is the strategy that you see mostly, you know, especially out there and among the sharps, when it comes to early season college football games where you kind of have no idea who is what?
Yeah, you know, Paul, it's a great point. You know, and this year in college football, you're going to see a lot of these top teams, Alabama, Ohio State, obviously the two best teams in the country, they're going to be laying almost three touchdowns in every game. I mean, just look at Ohio State week one playing the number five team in the country in Notre Dame. Notre Dame's going to be a good team. They might win 10 games. I mean, Ohio State's a 17.5-point favorite in that game. So, you know, I always think the public likes to bet those games, the Oregon-Georgia games, the Ohio State-Notre Dame games. Sharper players would rather bet a smaller game. They're going to love to bet the MAC and Conference USA and some of these smaller leagues that there's not as much information, and there's kind of a way to find an edge in those smaller conferences because it's just, you know, it doesn't have the draw of the SEC or the Big Ten. So I think public, once again, they like to bet the name brands. Sharp bettors don't bet any name brands.
Yeah. It's just kind of interesting, though. You see these early games, and teams just sort of, you know, sometimes it's teams that you think are going to be really good because of their brand name, they turn out to be not so good.
Well, that's absolutely true, and you get a lot of that. You get, once again, you get the guy who's in for the weekend and is maybe a USC alum or a Notre Dame alum or whatever the case may be, and they're just going to, you know, blindly bet their team no matter what, whether they're, you know, getting 18 points, laying 18 points, they don't really care. They're very happy to just have a ticket on their team. And, you know, we see that week in and week out. And, you know, this week one, you know, forget about week zero. There's just really good games. Obviously, I mentioned the Oregon-Georgia game. I mentioned the Ohio State-Notre Dame game. Utah going to the Swamp to play Florida. Great game. You see a lot of money come in on Utah. We opened Utah minus one. Now Utah's minus 2.5. You know, Utah's, with USC, the best two teams in the Pac-12. Utah, a top 10 team. Obviously, Florida's still an SEC team with a lot of talent. They've been down these last couple of years. That's going to be, that to me is the game that I'm most interested to see. Utah going across the country, having to play a game in the Swamp.
Yeah. I mean, obviously those things are all a major factor. Arthur, if you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice as they, you know, embark on another season of betting football, what would it be?
As always, Paul, have fun with it. Don't think you're going to pay your mortgage or get a Ferrari out of it. Bet what you can afford and just have fun with it, guys. And listen, if you're a college football guy, just bet college football. You don't have to bet the NFL. vice versa. You're an NFL guy, just bet the NFL. College football can be overwhelming with 40, 50, 60 games every Saturday. So I always tell people, just have fun with it.
He's Arthur DeCesar. You can find him out at the Westgate Sportsbook. Thank you, Arthur.
Anytime, Paul. We'll talk soon.
All right. That's Arthur DeCesar. And, of course, I'm Paul Zeiss. And coming up, we've got Will Graves from the Associated Press. Talk a little Steelers. And he's also a Mountaineer himself, so we'll talk a little West Virginia. It's 93.7 The Fan.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Hotline's brought to you, Nemecol, and around every corner, Nemecol creates real life magic for guests. Let's go to the hotline, talk to our good friend from the Associated Press, Will Graves. Will covers everything, really, and he also has some working knowledge of West Virginia, so he's a great guest because we're talking about all things football in this town. And Will, I'll actually start with that West Virginia Pitt game. I've said before, I'm most intrigued by that game of all the games next week, not because it's the backyard brawl, but because I have zero idea what West Virginia is going to bring to the table. I know you like West Virginia. Or are you as intrigued as I am to see what the Mountaineers are?
I mean, I'm intrigued, but sort of leery, right? I mean, I think, you know, Neil Brown is a nice guy. You know, certainly I think in terms of a guy being a representative of your program, I'd rather have that guy than the previous guy. Daniel Holgorsen, a guy that you could sort of tolerate when you were winning and scoring 70 on Clemson in the Orange Bowl, but, you know, when you're getting boat raced by Oklahoma, not so much. So, I think this is a real important year from him. I mean, obviously, you know, getting JT from Daniels from Georgia certainly solidifies the quarterback position. But, I mean, the thing is, looking at Pitt, who knows what you're going to get with Keaton Slovis? Who knows what you're going to get with the offense? But I really, really think that their front seven is going to be a problem for West Virginia. I really, really think it's going to be a problem. So am I intrigued by what the Mountaineers are doing? Yes, but I am. I mean, I think, and we've seen this for certain, especially in the last 2 years with Pitt, especially early in the year, that defense, like offenses are not ready for that when they see it. They are not ready. And I think what Pitt's got going on up front is going to be cause some serious problems for WVU next Thursday.
Well, like I said, it's going to be interesting to me that it is just a team in West Virginia with a brand new quarterback, a new offensive coordinator, a new sort of philosophy completely on offense. It just is going to be very, very interesting to see what they are and what they look like, when they play finally play games.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the thing about college, right? I mean, the NFL, there's preseason, and there's a fair amount of carryover from year to year, but now you see, you know, the NCAA is like the NFL on steroids because everybody's on a one-year contract, and, you know, you see that just the movement. Look what's happened with the WVU and Pitt basketball programs the last few years, right? So, I mean, football, it's becoming more and more like that. So, I mean, that you really don't know, right? I mean, the thing with Pitt, you can look at Pitt, and yeah, you lose Penny, and yeah, you lose Jordan Addison, but, I mean, the entire offensive line is back. I don't think Frank Cignetti's going to, you know, he's not installing an air raid offense. I think there's going to be some continuity there. And with WVU, they are mysterious, but I, when I think of mystery for them, I always think of, like, bad things, right? I mean, I sort of associate, if you go to WVU, for the most part, you associate unknown with not good, right? So I think they'll be better later in the season, but it's just, I mean, my expectations for them next Thursday are super low.
Well, it should be interesting just kind of to see what they do. And, you know, if they get to like 7 or 8 wins, is that going to be enough for Neil Brown to stay around?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, the bigger question is, and for all those other teams in the, you know, the Big 12 that's not named, you know, OU and Texas, is like, what does this league look like in like 3 years? You know, I mean, that's the big – WVU needs to win and win a lot if it wants to make itself attractive to – the Big Two, right? And I think that goes for every other program in the conference, basically, right? So, you know, super important year for him. It was weird. I was in I took our kid. I think last time I was on, I was talking about our kid's baseball team. We went down to South Carolina, played in a tournament in Myrtle Beach. At the hotel I'm at, I run into, you know, I'm enjoying an adult beverage in the late afternoon. I'm in the hot tub on the 7th floor terrace, and folks walk by. They're from Parkersburg. In their early 70s, retired, and we started talking. They're big football boosters, and they love Neil Brown, right? I mean, and they've given copious amounts of money to the program in the last few years. So, I mean, but I don't know. Like, the part that I can't get is, like, I see him, and I can see him being in a room full of boosters, a bunch of, you know, alums with deep pockets and talk and saying the right things. It's just, like, how does he – I'm trying to figure out how that guy connects with, like, 20-year-old kids, because he just doesn't seem to have that sort of, like, it factor for me. That being said, I do think they need to make some serious – if they win the games they should and steal a couple they shouldn't, that should get them to 7 or 8. But, like, you've got to beat the Kansas States of the world. You got to beat the Iowa States of the world. And those programs are all sort of like in the Texas Tech of the world. Like, they're all sort of in that same bubble in the middle of the conference, right? So – they need to win those games and then win the ones they should, and that could get them to 7 or 8. But, I mean, if he has a 5-win season or a 4-win season, I think he's in serious trouble.
Right. That's the big thing to me, is that it is just a kind of a mystery team in so many ways. And, of course, we will start to get an idea who they are next Thursday when they play here against your Pitt Panthers. Switching gears, you've done a lot of coverage of the Steelers, and you've done it. You've managed to do it without having to go to all sorts of hyperbole and silliness when talking about the quarterback position, which makes you kind of unique in some ways. Yes, you're kind of unique. To me, again,
I appreciate that.
What's that? Yeah, I mean, to me, it looks very clear to me that the Steelers have made it very clear that Mitch Trubisky is going to be their starter. Are there signs that you're going to be looking for on Sunday that maybe that could change? Or are you like me that just kind of feel like it's probably going to, be very anticlimactic?
I feel it's going to be anticlimactic, and I mean, I think that they're making every attempt. I'm in the locker room today, and it was sort of weird. Like, Mason Rudolph's at his locker, and Tyler Vaughn, the receiver, is right next to him. All the media, all the TV guys and stuff go and talk to Vaughn, and Mason just sort of walks by, and I grabbed him, and I started talking to him for a couple minutes, and I basically, look, Mason's polished, right? But I basically spent like 5 minutes trying to get him to say that this wasn't a fair fight from the beginning, right? And he was very, you know, he's kind of said, you know, he says all the right things. And then at the end, you know, I said, has this been as open a competition as Mike T has said? And he said, and I put it in my story today, he said, like, it's like, you know. And yeah, I could tell in his brain he was trying to think, what can I say that's not going to get me in trouble, right? And he basically said, you know, I'm here to compete until I'm not here to compete anymore. I mean, it is very obvious that he's sort of the odd man out. If you look at the reps, the way the practice reps have been split, especially as we've gotten deeper into camp, it's obvious that the team's, you know, confidence level in Kenny Pickett, you know, continues to grow. And he's played okay, but I mean, you know, watching practice today without breaking any big rule, let's just say every quarterback threw a ball that ended up in the hands of a guy wearing gold, okay? So that being said, I mean, I just think, and it makes sense. I think we talked about it last time I was on. If you go to Kenny from the get-go, like you have to, I mean, you can't bench him. You have to ride it out. And look, Mike Tomlin's a prideful guy. And I think if you asked him, if you had to put truth serum in him, you know, after the Super Bowl win, you asked him what's the second accomplishment he's the most proud of as a coach, it's not having a losing season, right? And I think, you know, the surest way to at least have a shot at that is hope that Mitch Trubisky sort of is a caretaker for the offense and, you know, that the defense returns to looking more like it did in 2020 and you win a bunch of 20-17 games. That's the way that I sort of see the Steelers' path to success, and I think Mitch is the surest bet to that. And I think with Kenny, I don't think he's going to be terrible. Let me stress, I don't think he's going to be awful, but I just think that's an awful lot to put on a kid. I mean, if Kenny Pickett, the thing that, Paul, you talked about the race to kind of crown him in this town. If Kenny Pickett had gone to Iowa State and it had the exact same career, would Steeler fans be losing their minds about this guy?
Well,
they wouldn't.
Well, you know,
I mean, there's
yeah, I would say that because he's a first-round pick, there would be excitement. But, yes, the way over-the-top hyperbole about five-yard throws into the flat and you know, a touchdown pass that is essentially a 10-yard curl route where a six-string defensive back falls down. I mean, I think those things would probably not be exaggerated like they have been.
Yeah, and it's not to say, like I think he's like a Neil O'Donnell type guy. And look, Neil O'Donnell took the Steelers to the Super Bowl. There is no shame in being Neil O'Donnell. I just think if they start him week one, you know, I just don't – that's just a lot to ask for him. And, I mean, wouldn't you always rather be the guy, like the in-between guy? I mean, Urban Meyer had Ron Zook between him and Steve Spurrier, right? I mean, you know, you always want to have that buffer. So that, you know, even like the Colts, they had that awful year, you know, where Peyton was out and they had like Jim Sorgi starting a quarterback and then they got luck, right? I mean, it's just an awful lot to ask for the guy. I mean, I think Kenny's a smart guy. I think he's a competitor. I think he's tough. But, I mean, if you commit to him week one, you're saying we're with him 1-17 and there's going to be some bumps in the road. And let's see how everybody feels if they start in week one and those bumps in the road have you 2-5 after 7 weeks. How much they're going to love Kenny Pickett then? I would much rather see what you got in Trubisky, and then if he struggles and they're 2-5 and Kenny comes in, you have nothing to lose. So that's the way I would approach it. That's the way I think the Steelers are going to approach it. And the Steelers' best-case scenario is that Mason lights it up, and then the Lions call them, like, the, you know, on what the cut day's Tuesday, the Lions call them on Wednesday and be like, hey, how about a fifth-round pick and 25 for Mason Rudolph, and Steelers say, see ya. And they bring a lot of Coon back as their emergency guy. So, I mean, that's the way it looks like it's playing out to me. But I'm not trying to win Twitter, so what do I know?
Right, exactly. I would say that you start Mitch Trubisky, and let's see where he can go. And at some point, if he falters and it's pretty clear it's not working, then you go to Pickett. But to me, I think the Steelers have made it pretty clear. That's the thing. So many people are looking for every single whatever positive sign they can find that it's going to happen for Kenny Pickett, as opposed to really just kind of listening to the Steelers and watching how they've done things.
Yeah, I mean, I think they make rational. I do think this is a franchise for better or for worse that doesn't rush things, right? And I just think that it's from a practical standpoint. I mean, look, there's no Steeler fan. I don't care what kind of, you know, black and gold glasses you look through, that can look at that team and say they're an elite team in the AFC. Do I think they could sneak into the playoffs? Yes. I'm not saying they're good. You know, I think they will be competitive. But if you're not an elite team, you know, do you – and you don't want to risk going 3-14 if your rookie quarterback struggles with that line. I mean, that's the other thing, Paul, that we haven't even mentioned in this conversation. I mean, you look at that line – and I mean, you know, and I put this on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, like the list of, you know, the list of quarterbacks, young quarterbacks that played behind bad lines and saw their careers basically abruptly halted is long, right? Guys that get gun shy, guys that get hit. I mean, look at, you know, David Carr, for example. A guy probably would have been a pretty good quarterback if he had played behind a line that didn't allow 70 sacks for an expansion team, right? I mean, I think, and this is more, I mean, this is a little more obscure. I think of a guy like Patrick Ramsey, who, when Spurrier was a coach in Washington, he was like their second round pick. He had a gun, but Spurrier's offense was designed for college, not the NFL. So these linemen couldn't block. The kid got destroyed. He was out of the league in like 3 years, right? So, I mean, that's the line. If you want somebody to take the, you know, Mitch Trubisky is sort of expendable in that scenario, right? He is not the long term solution to quarterback for the Steelers. So you might as well, if that line is struggling, I mean, good luck, Mitch. Go out there, run for your life, and God bless you. You know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I do think, as much as the panic is that set in about the line, though, I will say the fact that, you know, 22 hasn't been in the game yet. I mean, I think when he gets in the game, things will be a little bit different. I mean, because defenses right now aren't looking at Anthony McFarland Jr. or Benny Snell or anybody else back there, Jalen Warren, and going, well, we got to stop that guy.
Right.
I think when Najee Harris is in the game and getting 20 to 25 touches, I do think that the line will be better pass protectors because they're going to have a running back there that can actually run the ball. So.
Well, Will, I appreciate you jumping on, and I'm sure we'll see you, probably see you before. If not, we will definitely see you at the Backyard Brawl. Well, I'll probably see you on Sunday night at the preseason game. Will you be there?
Yes, yeah, of course, man.
All right. So, if it's open, you're there.
Anytime, man.
Hey, thanks, Will. That's Will Graves from the Associated Press on Paul Zeiss. It's 93.7 The Fan. This is Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. I'm Paul Zeiss. It is the Paul Zeiss Show. The Paul Zeiss Show is brought to you by Archie's on Carson Street. Get down to Archie's, the official chicken wing of the Fan. Archie's, the home of 80 Cent Wings Monday through Thursday, home of the Paul Zeiss Grilled Cheese Sandwich. So get down to Archie's and enjoy a good time. Let's go to the Nemacolin Hotline, talk to our good friend around every corner. Nemacolin creates real-life magic for guests. Let's talk to our good friend Chris Adamski from the Trib. Chris, we know you cover the Steelers, and we're talking a lot of football, but I got to dive sort of just take a quick little detour here. What do you expect from the Nittany Lions, who you are very familiar with as well this year? Are they going to be a team that gets back to 10-11 wins? Is this a year that James Franklin sort of redeems himself?
You know, I don't know that. You know, they start out with a road game in the conference, and I know that they should be Purdue, or they should be better than Purdue, but we don't know that for sure, I guess, and or at least on the road to start out that way until you see this team and see it play. And then they got a road game at Auburn, and of course you got a road game at Ohio State, and the road game is at Michigan. Or anyway, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State. Michigan State's at home this year, so. The offensive line's been an issue for going on 5 or 6 years now. So until I see there's until I see it's fixed, I'm not going to believe it's fixed. And if that's the case, and they're losing in the trenches, even against sort of the Big Ten middleweights, not to mention the Ohio States of the world, then they're not going to be able to compete with the Ohio States of the world. And so I need them to prove it. I put the Roadrunner for wins maybe more around, 8 or 8.5 this year.
Well, we'll see. It should be interesting, to see how it all happens and what goes on. But at the end of the day, they need to have a big bounce back. I mean, they just gave him a big, long contract and committed to a bunch of money to the program. He's got to sort of pay them back.
Yeah, things were going. I think they were sort of, underrated or something. That stretch from 16 through 19, you had three, New Year's Day bowls or New Year's whatever they're called. They're actually not playing New Year's Day. But you don't have to. We had a Cotton Bowl. There was a Peach Bowl. There was the Rose Bowl, and Big Ten Championship in that time. They were a top five to ten team in the country over that span. That's a whole recruiting class worth a 4 year span. And then the 2020 season, okay, if you want to throw that out, and that was kind of I was willing to be okay with the rationale or the excuses or however you want to put it, depending on how you want to say it. With the 2020, they started out 0-5, and won their Final Four, which I actually thought was sort of a testament maybe to the coaching staff and to the program that didn't – I mean, they're playing in empty stadiums. You know, games are getting canceled everywhere. They're wearing masks, whatever. And they started out 0-5. And they could have just, you know, played out the string and finished, you know, 0-8 or whatever and said they didn't want to play a game or whatever. And they came back and won their last four. So I actually, you know, everything that happened in that year in the world, I was okay with them, you know, as an observer or as somebody trying to evaluate them. Say, okay, that's an outlier. This season, you know, didn't count for a lot of people. And then last season, starting out 5-0, being top four in the country, and hey, they didn't have a backup quarterback. And that's so they lost a game that they shouldn't know that they were in control of against Iowa, and then they lost just a total abomination of a game against Illinois last year, the 9-overtime 20-18 game, one of the most bizarre college football, humorous games in college football history, a 9-overtime game that ends 20-18, and then from there the season sort of fell apart. So, you know, again, maybe you forgive one season and say, okay, an aberration, a blip, but now 11-11 over the last 2 years combined, you're right. I don't think, you know, resources are poured in there. This is obviously, it's not like it's a new coach or anything, and I think Franklin's a good coach. I really do. A third middling mediocre season would at that point, then I think you can start asking questions and, you know, maybe you know, the panic maybe starts to set in a little bit that things aren't where they should be.
Well, that's obvious. You know, that's definitely you know, one of those things where you look at that and you just wonder if they can pull it together sufficiently in order to try and you know, to make it so everybody kind of knows that they're on the right path with James Franklin. To your other team that you are cover, that you are very familiar with, is the Steelers. And, of course, so much has been focused on a couple of different positions. But my question to you is, with respect to some of the other positions we haven't talked about, the cornerbacks, for instance, who is winning those, you know, those battles?
A cornerback. That's something that, you know, Levi Wallace has clearly not really been competitive to be that number two guy that I think people are number one. You know, I guess even some people might have thought that Cam Sutton's sort of stature was in, you know, jeopardy, or you know, the three. They go out and they sign two guys to similar, actually identical contracts. One of them was a returnee in Akella Witherspoon, the other one Levi Wallace that they brought in on exact same two-year contracts, and Cam Sutton on a similar type contract in the final year of his two-year deal he signed the year before. So three cornerbacks that are all proven at the NFL level, but, you know, none of them are stars or Pro Bowl level players. But anyway, it's kind of the narrative in the early spring was, okay, how is this going to shake out when you have these three starters, and none of the three are supposedly supposed to be your slot corner, and all three of them are on the outside. And Sutton, of course, Sutton can play inside. So that was sort of how we thought it might play out. But actually, Sutton's been more repping on the outside, and it's really going to be sort of a cornucopia. Actually, Tim Benz had a good story about this, and I've been meaning to kind of write it myself or dive into it, where they might use everybody. They might use, you know, 9 or 10 defensive backs. You know, some of them will play a lot more than others, of course, but I think they're going to have sub-package after sub-package after sub-package, at least going by camp and practice. They've been putting Arthur Mollett in the slot on running downs, and they bring in Levi Wallace on passing downs and putting Sutton in the slot for that. You have to Trey Norwood's been in some sub-packages. There's been Killebrew, Miles Killebrew comes in on some, you know, run-heavy or tight-end-heavy packages. They decide another cornerback or another DB, at least a safety that could maybe fit in there, and Elijah Riley. You can go up and down. There's going to be a lot of guys playing, I feel like, and it just kind of depends. It probably be a lot of matchup dependent, situation dependent, but you'll see a lot. But it's definitely kind of your original question: who's going to the competition between Witherspoon and Wallace seems, at least judging by games and practices and reps and first team reps and all that, Witherspoon has pretty much been winning that going away. And I think it's going to be Cam Sutton and Akella Witherspoon pretty much playing, you know, 90 to 100% of the snaps every week, and everybody else kind of fighting for the scraps. Levi Wallace in that second tier, fighting for whatever snaps he can get, whatever packages he'll be in on.
Well, and that's the thing. That's a great question. Is that when you look at that as your starting corners, are they good enough?
Well, you know, I don't think. Let's put it this way, Paul. I don't think it's a glaring weakness. I don't think it's something that's going to get them beat week in and week out. I don't think it's something that you're looking like, whoa, this is a big hole, or you know, the opposing quarterbacks, opposing coordinators are going to salivate and say we can really pick on these guys. But I also don't think, like I said, there's not a Pro Bowler in that mix. There's not somebody who is going to, you know, the quote unquote, and I don't like the cliche because everybody uses it, but the shutdown corner. There's nobody who you're going to, certainly nobody's going to chase around the other team's best receiver and go back and forth and follow him and be somebody that's a, you know, a matchup problem for other teams' number one receiver. You're not going to have that. So, you know, they got bigger problems in cornerback for sure. I think they're okay there. I think they'd be comfortable going into the season what they got, but it's also not like this, you know, like I said, nobody's making a Pro Bowl. It's no better than, you know, an average group in terms of the NFL hierarchy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing that you, to me, you know, we tend to sort of overrate guys, you know, that we're familiar with and that we watch. But I look at the Steelers, and there's a lot of people that are talking about, you know, they're going to be better than we think, this and that and everything. And I kind of say, if you go from the back to the front, their linebacking group is got a chance to be decent, except for I think there's one hole, and we all know where that's at. But they're also very thin. If there's any of those other three guys get hurt, it probably changes completely. The corners, I would say, are good enough, but not quite good enough. I think a half the defensive line is somewhat pedestrian, and the offensive line is somewhat pedestrian, if not worse. You've got quarterbacks. You've got one guy who's a career journeyman, essentially, a career backup, and a rookie. I mean, why is there all these, like, really optimistic projections about the Steelers? I just don't get it.
Yeah, I don't – you know, it starts with the quarterback and not kind of knowing what you got there, right? If you're going to be really Mr. Optimistic to think that a rookie is going to come in and be a star, I mean, it has happened, of course, in the NFL in the past. But even the rookies that have been good they've been sort of aided by really good rosters around them. So if you're putting yourself at a disadvantage there, but Ben Roethlisberger last year, I think, was an under below average quarterback in the NFL. But I also think the Steelers were not a very good team last year. It's to their credit. I'll give them full credit that they made the playoffs and they finished with 9 wins despite having this not very good team. Talent-wise, they're getting blown out. You know, every other week it seemed like every one of their losses, it seemed like they weren't even competitive in them. But they found a way to get in the playoffs. So, hey I'll tip their cap to them for that. But, Paul, this time of year, you can see, like you said, you can see what you want to see. You can overrate your own team. You can talk yourself into something, right? If I could sit here and present a case to you. If you want to, you know, if you had, we're on the debate team, right? You say, you know what, Chris? Talk me into this. Tell me the Steelers are going to make the playoffs or whatever. And I could say and say, you know what, they got three All-Pro candidates on defense. They got a skill position group that I think is you know, it's not a top five in the league, but, you know, maybe you could sit here and say, I mean, Najee Harris can be a top back. I think you've got a deep receiving core, very talented there. I think Pat Freiermuth, an emerging, you know, star, or at least, you know, above average star, maybe not a superstar, but a star type tight end, I think is going to have the year you could have. You know, I think they had a pretty good draft. I think all the rookies are going to contribute. So I could say all that. You can say, yeah, you know what, you know, the team gets the 10 wins or something, 10 or 11 wins. But then you said, you know what, Adamski, tell me why the Steelers team stinks and why they're going to have trouble, you know, getting to 500 this year and extending the non-losing season streak. And I could say, yeah, you know what, there's obviously a question, an inside linebacker, the run defense was atrocious last year, and the offensive line was atrocious last year, and I don't know if either one of them necessarily is fixed. You know, you had a question of quarterback. So you can go back and forth on either way. And like a lot of things, you know, health and you know, things breaking the right way, and so it couldn't. That's why I think we all follow sports and like sports. You don't know what's going to happen on paper. This and this could happen. But I don't think the Steelers are an awful team by any means. I think their floors, you know, maybe in that 6-win range, and their ceilings probably in the, you know, maybe if everything breaks right, they sneak their way up there to 11-6. I don't know, but. But looking at the AFC is pretty stacked, and it's kind of hard to sit here and to be one of the top seven to make the playoffs. You got to find eight teams that they're worse than, right? If you do it backward instead of doing it to say they can fit it in seventh place, and it's kind of hard to see. There's a lot of, you know, depth in the AFC right now to see the Steelers will do it, but. Like I said, you could talk. You could say the run defense was fixed because Alualu is back, and they have Larry Ogunjobi now, right? And Miles Jack. So I mean, did that fix the run defense? It probably won't be worse than that. It'll probably be better than last year, right?
Right. Well,
worse. I don't know if that's good enough to make it be a playoff team, but you know that's the kind of things you do this time of year.
Well, we shall see, and of course. Chris, thanks for jumping on, and it'll all, you know, we'll have one more game of film, a game of film on Sunday to look and digest, so we shall see you on Sunday.
Yeah, and 2 weeks of practice before the real fun starts, I guess. All right, Paul, thanks a lot. I'll talk to you later.
All right. That is Chris Adamski from The Trib. I'm Paul Zeiss. It's 93.7 The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.